Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
February 20th, 2019, and to take a little step from yesterday and the way I began yesterday, it's really kind of been something that's been lingering on my mind. The idea of being able to come to grips with what's really happened in our past and what's currently happening today. With all the very easily demonstrable facts out there, easily verifiable facts out there to show you what's being carried out in our name around the world. And even if under some kind of thinly some guise of doing what you think is best for American interests, even though that may be today not so much anymore moral or right or altruistic, the reality of what's happening today is not what we believe we are as Americans, or even so much other countries around the world with the same concept. These actions being carried out, foreign policy otherwise, are not about morality. They're not about freedom or democracy. And it's something that really is beginning to materialize a lot because of the current administration and almost their willingness to remove that mask. But this goes much further than this current administration, as most of you probably know. This goes well beyond the two-party paradigm. And because of this deeply dishonorable, unethical, and criminal level at the top of this nation's power structure, companies, organizations, movements, all the way down to the individuals, we are affected by it, influenced by it, corrupted by it, to the point that you see this becoming a common trait, fraud and deceit, if you can pay for it. It's all okay as long as you can cover the cost of doing business, the normalization of immorality under cover of ambition. But the rest of us are stuck playing their fraudulent game. As always, this applies to U.S. foreign policy, which I'll begin with today, but I will end today with two stories about overwhelming corruption, fraud, and just cover-ups happening right here at home. So to begin today, an excellent article from Moon of Alabama in regard to Venezuela, that always doing excellent coverage from this outlet, but some interesting insights into first obvious examples of how Trump on record, or rather that was encapsulated in a book, so you could take it for what you will, but that openly said that let's go take out Venezuela because they have all this oil, something we don't need another book to show us is what's happening based on even Trump's previous statements, but as well as what Moon of Alabama seems to think is the setting up of a very clearly a false flag event, if you want to call it that, the idea of creating the situation for the U.S. or their opposition partners to go in and attack people under the guise of being the Venezuelan army under Maduro and using that as the justification to go in for more military action, which is not very shocking to anyone paying even slightly attention to U.S. foreign policy. This entitled, Trump Likes Beautiful Border Walls, Venezuela Should Build Him One, which you'll see why in a moment. It's an interesting title, but this idea is something we've seen coming. And, you know, we got the humanitarian aid fakes going around right now, the creation of all these false stories in order to emotionally manipulate people into thinking that Maduro's blocking all financial aid, even though he's gotten tons and tons of it from other places that the mainstream media won't tell you about, but that they're setting up the possibility during this floundering coup, because that's what it is, to give them the justification, even whether it's just emotional reaction from Americans or otherwise, to be able to move forward on this. And that, again, is what we've seen in all kinds of places, Syria being a prime example. One of the story of Duma is right now breaking and resolving in front of us as we find out that, oh, even the BBC producer says that it was all staged, as the mainstream media dutifully ignores it, as they do with anything that points out their fraudulence. Now, Aaron Mate, as the article begins, who is currently on the ground in Venezuela, you know, like Abby Martin and other independent journalists doing what journalists are supposed to do, not just regurgitating what the government tells them to say like mainstream media, but he's on the ground in Venezuela, showing you the reality of both sides. And he notes how Trump early on targeted Venezuela. And here's his tweet where he shares this. And I found this to be very interesting. It says, page 136 of McCabe's new book. Now, obviously, in that sense, you could argue that he just made it up in his book, which is certainly possible. Recounting a 2017 Oval Office meeting. Quote, then the president talked about Venezuela. That's the country we should be going to war with, he said. They have all that oil and they're right on our back door. Interesting. Now, regardless of whether you take the book for you know, at face value, this is something he's said on record before, going in there and taking the oil and splitting it with the rebels and on and on. This is a classic concept that Trump has talked about before. But now you have another example of him openly saying, yeah, look, they're right there. You know, the same excuse they use to pretend to say, oh, they're right in our back door. So we have to be careful about what they're doing and their terrorism. But in the reality is they're in our back door. So we need to go and take their resources from them, as we've seen so many other places. Now, it's not only Trump's idea to carry out regime change on Venezuela, as many of you know. Ever since 1998 and further, when Hugo Chavez was elected, the U.S. plotted to carry out regime change against Venezuela. It was Obama who put sanctions on the country, absurdly and baselessly claiming it was a national security threat that they exist, apparently. Now, right-wing economists have for years thought up detailed plans on how to basically rob Venezuela of its national assets, always under the guise of humanitarianism. Now, plan A for this recent coup we're seeing failed when the Venezuelan military did not accept Guaido's brazen claim to declare himself president. There was no plan B, as Moon points out. The U.S. is now improvising, which I think is kind of obvious. The delivery of this, quote, humanitarian aid is a pretext to break the border between Colombia and Venezuela. And we've been covering this since it's been happening. And I think this is all too clear. There's ploys they're using to break through, using humanitarian aid, as always, to cover their military action. Now, as Moon of Alabama points out, U.S. government aid is always political. U.S. aid workers are suspects. Consider these U.S. aid red teams, which a 2018 study commissioned by the U.S. Ford agency recommended. And basically, and he lists the clear example of this U.S. aid red teams. The information he gives is astounding. Read this article for yourself. But the idea that these groups are basically military personnel, cross-trained as humanitarian aid workers, and these people that go, the red team he's talking about, go in there, and they're designed to be able to live off the grid and like things you wouldn't expect the average international worker to do. Basically, these are military personnel, mercenaries, under the guise of U.S. aid, and this is on record, of this study points out, inside U.S. aid. So they're sending in basically covert military personnel into these countries under the guise of humanitarian aid. Exactly what they're doing now in Venezuela, that they'll argue is not the case. Now, as he asks, he says, U.S. aid officers will also be special forces. Special forces will also be U.S. aid workers. Which is it? Because that's what the study's talking about. It says, how many of these red teams are now in Colombia waiting to cross into Venezuela? It's an excellent question we have to ask, how they're constantly using these, just like within Syria, using the cover of these humanitarian aid operations to facilitate intelligence operations, military operations. This is historical. This is very easy to show. And if you read into this article farther and understand that he's talking about these military personnel working in humanitarian aid, and it's very clearly documented. Again, the idea that they just think you do not care enough to look into this stuff, that you're willing to take them at face value. And I think the people that are willing to do that today are few and far between, but they usually scream the loudest, which is why they put them forward as the false majority. Now, Moon outright states in this article, on Saturday, February 23rd, a breach of the Venezuelan border. This, again, this is a story that we've been trying to get into for a while now, this conflict building between the border. But he says, on February 23rd, a breach of the border will be attempted with the intent to provoke an escalation. It's rare that you'll see him just outright say this, and his research is sound. It says that escalation will then be used to justify further action up to military strikes or even an invasion, which is alarming, to say the least. It's something that we've seen happen in other countries, but it seems the U.S. has lost its taste for U.S. military adventurism around the world, and I'm glad to see that, because it's disgusting and it kills people and has nothing to do with saving anybody. But now it seems like we're in a time where people aren't going to be so willing to accept military strikes on a country that has nothing to do with their usual guise of fighting terrorism or even an invasion, all to carry out a clearly focused oil gold type of an agenda. But he's saying on February 23rd, which we'll be here to report for, they're going to try to do this and create this justification for military action. Now, the so-called aid that we've been talking about is also supposed to come via sea and through the border with Brazil to prevent that Venezuela to prevent them from coming from these other locations, which is something that's been developing actually today. They've closed down the maritime border with the Dutch Caribbean islands as well. And this is something the U.S. wasted no time jumping on and saying, so see, he's trying to block aid. He's trying to starve his people to death. which is so easy to prove is not true. We just talked about the 933 tons of aid that came from Cuba and Russia and China that are using to help people. They just don't want your politicized, military-guised aid. That's what they're saying. Now, it says the Brazil route for now is too remote for the desired media attention, is what he's reporting on. So the idea is that they're basically, the reason they're making this bridge and these concepts so focused in your mind is because they need the media to be paying attention to it. This is all a political and media show. That's what it's all designed to be. Now, the U.S.-backed aid concerts that have been popping up, which I'm sure you've heard about, which I briefly touched on before, are going to be held in Colombia. So basically, they're creating these fake humanitarian aid concert events to bring people in to give their money, pretending that Venezuela is like not allowing anything to come in, which is stupidly easy to prove is false. But as always, Pink Floyd musician Roger Waters spoke out, because he's always one of the people to stand up and speak out against the lies. Like, and these other concerts are being funded by Richard Branson, of course, and he's speaking out against the Richard Branson's not really for aid concert, he called it, and the U.S. regime change attempt in Venezuela. So good for him. He said the Red Cross and the United Nations unequivocally agree. Don't politicize aid. Leave the Venezuelan people alone to exercise their legal right to self-determination. It's nice to see somebody speaking up for these things. But regardless of all the easy evidence to show that they're politicizing this, and the UN, the Red Cross, and everybody is distancing themselves from the U.S.'s overtly military effort here, they're just doing it anyway. Because like Trump said, he is doubling down, like I said yesterday, no matter what, we're going to do this. And if you stop us, you're going to lose everything. Basically just threatening anybody that tries to stand against them. Now, Moon goes on to say, on Saturday, when the U.S. proxy crowd will try to cross the border with unneeded aid, that's important, because the idea of the aid that they don't need, that they're trying to pretend that this is the only thing they're going to get, then he's stopping it. But so the aid that they don't need to bring across, while this is happening, he says some snipers shooting into the crowd is more than likely. And while dozens of cameras are surely to be there rolling, like he talked about. Now, any casualties will be blamed on the Venezuelan military. The incident will be the propaganda pretext for further U.S. action. Already days ago, Russia's foreign ministry warned of such a false flag attack. Now, remember, Russia has done this on numerous occasions, and they've almost always come to pass. And then the U.S. very, you know, half-heartedly tries to pretend like, oh, that's evidence that Russia was behind this, and there's nothing to make that the case. They tried that multiple times in Syria, and now we know that they lied about all of these, and these are all right there for you to look at. So Russia is yet again warning of another false flag in Venezuela. Zakharova said, quote, a provocation involving victims is being put together under the guise of humanitarian convoys. They need it just as a pretext to use outside force, and everybody should understand that. That's Maria Zakharova from Russia. It's a pretty big claim, and they've shown to be right in the past. Now, Trump's national security advisor, John Bolton, is, as usual, playing his role and prepping everybody for what he knows he's making happen behind the scenes. He just recently tweeted, the Venezuelan military must uphold its duty to protect civilians at the Colombian and Brazilian borders and allow them to peacefully bring in humanitarian aid without violence or fear of persecution. It's funny, this out of, you know, Bolton sitting around going, you know what, I'm just going to tweet about this random thing that I think might happen just in case. Just like saying, oh, if anyone uses chemical weapons in Syria, we're going to do something about it. It's just for these timings. And now if all of a sudden civilians get hurt on the border crossing, it's John Bolton, I guess, was just psychic. No, it's because they're behind creating these events. And this is meant to prep everybody for that it's about to happen. He goes on to say, any actions by the Venezuelan military, of course, to condone or instigate violence against peaceful civilians at the Colombian-Brazilian border will not be forgotten. Leaders still have time to make the right choice. So instead of just tweeting, you know, Maduro shouldn't kill anybody, you know, any violence he carries out will be against him. But no, just saying specific actions that take place on this one spot that we're prepping. If anything happens there, if he does anything, we're going to, it's just stupidly obvious. You're really going to call out one specific spot because you know that you're priming this to happen. I'm not psychic. It's because he's done this before. Bolton is a usual suspect in these kind of orchestrated false flag events to carry out military action. This is classic U.S. foreign policy. Now, Venezuela is not in need of U.S. aid, as he outlines in this article. They're getting aid from all kinds of places, and the struggles they're currently dealing with are blown out of proportion by most of the media. And the reason that they're even having these is because of the U.S. sanctions, which has been verified by the United Nations, by multiple people, experts in the field. Unless, you know, you're just ignoring all that and paying attention to mainstream media, you might think something different. Now, it is in need of an end of the economic sanctions that are putting it under, as Maduro has talked about, strangulation, basically a medieval siege, as Weisenbright called it. That's what it is. There is no current lack of food or medicine like in Yemen, however, though some products do run short, right? But see, the Yemen is another place that the U.S. is doing this more so than anywhere else in the world, but we just don't talk about that. We just look at Venezuela because we want their gold and oil. It's a really sad scenario that this continues to pop up and that we just can't see the reality of everybody saying that they're lying. The UN, the Red Cross, Caritas already have aid distribution programs within Venezuela right this moment. They reject the U.S. aid delivery as a political stunt because it is. The International Committee of the Red Cross recently doubled its budget for Venezuela to $18 million and is ready to provide more. Last week, 933 tons of medicine came from Cuba and China. Another 300 just came from Russia and is supposed to arrive today. You're not hearing about any of this on the mainstream media. Now, the Venezuelan government has had enough time to game out how best to respond to the breach attempt at its border. It needs to block the roads and it needs to prevent provocations. And as he puts it at the end, Trump likes walls on the border, so Venezuela should give him just that, which I found kind of interesting, kind of funny to play on this. But there's so much information here to take out. Read this for yourself. But the reality is that they seem to be prepping a false flag. And if it comes to pass in 2 days, you heard it here and we're going to talk about it. Because this is something that, how many times have we said they're prepping a false flag, they've got chemicals in Syria, and no one believed it, the media ignored it, and then it happens, and they try to blame it on Assad. And we saw it coming, we talked about it. So just remember, this is what they do. Spread this to people that don't know any better, so at the very least, when it happens, you can say, I told you it was coming, and we knew this was being planned, and here's why, here's the information. Maybe just wake one more person up. But moving on to another story in regard to foreign policy before we get to the domestic stuff, It's almost humorous to me. Like, I almost laughed when I saw this because we just talked about this in regard to Venezuela. Another thing, anti-war. Seeking legal cover for war, Trump administration attempts to tie Iran to Al-Qaeda, which is staggeringly stupid when you understand the nuances of both sides. But they're doing it anyway because this is their classic attempt to use Iran as the just catch-all bad guy these days because that's been their agenda for a very long time. But all we know, as Trump would say, they do bad, bad things. Now, that's good enough for most people, but not for someone who actually cares about the truth. Bad, bad things is not enough evidence. I want to see, you know, evidence like destroying multiple countries and leaving them in ruin, or like bombing countries continually without any international approval, or invading countries and starving people to death. That would be proof that Iran's a bad, bad group. But now they're just trying to tie them in with, you know, Al-Qaeda, the group that the U.S. is working with in Yemen and Syria. Which, you know, let that contradiction spin around in your head, but apparently that means they're the bad guy. So, seemingly controlled by the extremely, obviously hawkish groups in his administration against Iran specifically, the vast majority of the Trump administration has been absolutely salivating about starting something with Iran, as Bolton, we just saw him outright threaten Iran, which is pretty interesting. Now, Congress is unlikely to sign off if the administration just simply asks for new war authorization, specifically aimed at Iran, as they have actually dragged their feet in the past and tried to put certain verbiage in different bills to stop them from going after Iran. So some people recognize the play here. Instead, the administration is now looking to, again, try to broaden the decades-old authorization they already have, hoping to squeeze one last big, plainly unintended war out of it. And of course, we're talking about the authorization for use of military force. Now, in the same fashion we're just seeing play out right now in Syria, in Yemen, and even now in Venezuela, right now, with Pompeo saying, oh yeah, now there's Iran there, because that's just our excuse, officials have begun trying to advance the preposterous claim that Iran is secretly backing high-level Al-Qaeda operatives. Because I guess the broad, just, they foment terror around the world isn't sticking with people. You know, because we need those pesky things called facts. But Iran has been at war with Al-Qaeda since the group's founding. Not surprising, since they were founded and funded and armed and protected by the U.S. government. Verifiably so, all the way back to fighting the U.S., the Soviets. This is a classic concept. And it makes perfect sense why Iran would be against their proxy army, because they've been fighting back against the U.S. oligarchy since the 70s when they took their country back. You know, if you're not familiar, in the 50s, Operation Ajax is when the government, on record now we do know, overthrew the democratically elected government and put in place a dictator. All facts. And since they took it back in the 70s, now they're the bad guy again. And they've been fighting Al-Qaeda ever since the founding of it. And the Shiite Iranian government is fundamentally incompatible with the Salafist terrorist group Al-Qaeda. But these facts don't mean anything to their propaganda campaigns, because they bank on the fact that you don't know enough, because they don't tell you enough. That's why you need to listen to other people, such as independent media. Now, tying these two groups together It's so patently absurd that U.S. officials have not really even tried to do so overtly over the years, instead kind of presenting the possibility as little more than a floated general consensus with no supporting information. Now, officials seem now to hope that this false premise, repeated often enough, and will, you know, with enough alarmist tone, will just become widely accepted, or at least not challenged enough to be rejected out of hand. That classic line that you repeat, you say a lie enough times, it becomes the truth. Now, this is where the 2001 authorization for use of military force comes in. This is where this starts to matter. The authorization for use of military force, the AUMF, authorized a war against Al-Qaeda. And that has been broadened since then to include basically anybody that they say is remotely connected to them or not at all. And they just say they are. Even groups that didn't even exist in 2001. This is the current state of the global war on terror. Anyone they deem as an enemy is now just lumped into somehow backwardly connected to Al-Qaeda, even though the U.S. is working with Al-Qaeda in Syria and Yemen. Again, just the mental gymnastics it takes to make this all still make sense is staggering. People just don't want to talk about it because it really does bring out that cognitive dissonance to realize that this is all fabricated. And the use for authorization of military force is continuing to expand. We just talked about the recent bill where they're talking about the Yemen war bill, and that Amash was telling us that secretly this Yemen bill, even though it looks like it's attacking the war on Yemen, is backhandedly expanding the effort to use the AUMF to just do what they want. This is how dangerous the situation we're in is. Now they're just trying to lump in Iran with all of this too. Now, it was obvious that the 2001 AUMF was never meant to apply to Iran. It's perfectly obvious. But even other such demonstrably baseless arguments have tended to be enough to justify America's previous and current sordid wars specifically from this authorization, as we've seen all today. Even though they're still claiming to be in Syria to fight Iran, they still vaguely use the AUMF as the guiding force for why they're allowed to be there, because they claim they're fighting terrorism. But it's kind of amalgamous, has shifted from fighting Assad to fighting the groups that they can have clear connections to now protecting Israel to stopping Iran. It's all over the place. But as long as they can thinly hold on to some connection to terrorism, this, they think, gives them a justification. Now, once a president picks a fight, classically, congressional leadership rarely has any interest in actually reviewing it. But try to stop one of those wars, and suddenly every member of Congress demands answers. But now the use of lumping Iran in with this same classic story is the last leg, as it would seem, to this part of what they're trying to accomplish. And we see that Iran is on the books. Bolton himself promised the MEK terrorist group on record that they would be done with them by 2019. So it seems like he's trying to keep that promise. But we'll keep track of this, and it's important that all of you as Americans stand up and point out the obvious fallacy in pretending that Iran is somehow connected with any of this, even though they've clearly been one of the principal people in fighting Al-Qaeda and ISIS around the world, to stop the U.S. empire from spreading it as it has. Seems pretty obvious to me, even though that's such a controversial thing to say. Let's ignore all the facts and evidence that make it very clear, because you can't say that. That's a bad thing. But hopefully you'll look into it for yourself. So for the last two stories of the day, something that I think is, it's alarming to me, this story, especially coming off the idea of the global war on terror, understanding the idea of their story of the hijacked planes and flying them into towers and all this whole story. This article leaves me a little bit unnerved, coming from Zero Hedge. A Texas mystery. Small town has 1,000 registered aircraft, but no airport. Now, of course, this story could be nothing. It could be there could be some kind of explanation to it that we're not seeing. But something about this stood out to me, similar to the way that the story of Timothy Cunningham at the CDC stood out to me. The moment that he went missing, something told me there was a bigger story there, and I was right. As it all came to pan out, it seems like there's a much bigger story. This thing stood out to me today, and I said, there's something to this. As I think it's not very hard to see. There's clearly something going on here. But something, to me, feels much larger than just recognizing there's criminal activity. To me, this stands out as more of a potential staging ground for false flags. Or, you know, having all of these unregistered planes in a location where they're not going to be seen, but it somehow has come to pass. Well, you'll see why it's even more alarming than that. So WFAA television station, local, revealed a secret in a small town, East Texas town called Onalaska, which has more than 1,000 registered aircraft, but no airport whatsoever. Now, the investigation found planes were registered to two standard post office boxes in Onalaska. According to the most recent government data, the town had a population of 2,755, indicating that there were enough registered aircraft for nearly 37% of its residents. 37%. Now, WFAA, and on Alaska had more registered planes than New York, Antonio, got something in my eye, Seattle, or San Diego. I mean, think about the absurdity of that. This is a small little town with no airport that has more planes per capita than these locations. Now, WFAA learned on Alaska is the epicenter for, guess what, a practice that allows foreigners to register their planes anonymously. Why is that even something that happens? That's something we should ask ourselves. Now, a former FFA official warns this practice allows, maybe drug dealing terrorists and other criminals to register aircraft in the U.S. quickly and anonymously. Huh. How is that even something that's on the books? This epicenter for a practice that allows foreigners to register planes anonymously. This is unbelievable to me, especially in the throes of what they're still carrying out this massive global war on terror under the guise of the very thing that this seems to be directly tied to. That's staggering. Industry leaders told WFAA that foreign multinational corporations often use trusts to register a plane because the FFA demands registrations have a U.S. citizen on file. Now, to register an aircraft, owners are required to be a U.S. citizen. However, there's a massive loophole. The FFA allows foreigners to register their planes by, guess what, transferring a title to a U.S. trustee. To a U.S. trustee. Now, how stupid is this for us to be in this massive war, global war on terror, wreaking havoc around the world while doing the last, basically nothing to make our country safer for what it is? Even if you believe that's what any of this is really about, which I don't, the reality of recognizing that all of this supposed global war on terror stems from the reality that we're protecting our country. And yet nothing, they don't take any, this is still happening plainly right in our country while they're out doing everything they can to invade over their other countries. How does that affect the safety of the United States? The point is none of it has nothing to do with that at all, but it should make it stupidly obvious to you that they can still have something like this happening in our country while they pretend that's the root cause of what they're doing around the world. It just blows me away. Now, apparently it only costs $5 for an owner to register a plane with the FFA. Once the clearing process is complete, the FFA will assign the aircraft a tail code that starts with an N. If the insignia is not present, the plane would have difficulty flying around the U.S. borders and could be intercepted by U.S. Air Force fighter jets. I guess unless we're discussing 9/11 types events, and then in that case, they'll just be ordered to stand down, right? Because that's how it goes. It says, quote, "We shouldn't require less information to register a car than to register an aircraft." This is from U.S. Representative Stephen Lynch. He said, "If you're a foreign national, you can register an aircraft here and the government doesn't know anything about it. Come on, it's laughable." Now, when our own congressmen are sounding logical, there's clearly a problem there. Now, in 2013, audit by the Office of Inspector General for the Department of Transportation said there were about 5,600 aircraft across the U.S. that lacked key information about ownership. Key information about who actually owns these airplanes. Now, in another audit of the five major trust companies involved in this whole weird loophole practice, federal investigators found the companies, quote, could not or would not provide the identities of 75% of the foreign owners requested. One trustee told the federal agents that they would need a subpoena of the information. Now, which is their right? Clearly, people have their rights to privacy, but the staggering practice of allowing foreign governments, you pick it. Could be Russia, could be Syria, could be Yemen, it could be Saudi Arabia, could be Israel, could be any country, because all they have to do is get a trustee on the ground, pay $5, and you're good. And we don't even know who owns the plane. In a town with no airport, with thousands of planes lined up. I wonder what's happening here. Is anyone else beginning to see the picture materialize? There is something being organized here. If it was a plane in another airport with the same scenario, you could argue, okay, it's a foreigner who wants a plane here and they have an airport. We're talking about thousands of planes in a town with no airport, gathering up the owners from foreigners buying these planes and having them sit around. No real way to identify who owns the plane. There's something weird going on here. My gut tells me that. And I think it's important that we really, really recognize the absurd hypocrisy of invading other countries around the world while this exact kind of thing, which ties directly to the story that they tell us about 9/11, is just, it's laughable to me. And hopefully people can see it. Now, to finish today, a truly grand example of just how far the deeply embedded corruption of this nation's leaders has bled into the most innocuous of situations, wherein a mistake was clearly made out of incompetence, laziness, maybe even apathy, but a mistake that nonetheless put people's lives in danger. And instead of owning it, taking responsibility, being accountable for one's actions, in this next story, we see the same thing everyone sees all day on the news and in our government. The attempt to do anything and everything to avoid accountability until there is simply no option. Then lie in every way possible. This next story coming from Zero Hedge in regard to the Grand Canyon. Grand Canyon Museum tourist exposed for years to dangerous radiation, whistleblower admits. Just coming out of the woodwork, people, recognizing that everyone in this country just now thinks it's okay to just kind of lie, cheat, steal, and deceive as long as they don't. This is the norm. It's like when kids do things they see their parents do. What do you expect? Our leaders are corrupt. And so people are, it's like Wells Fargo continuing to break the law, continue to steal and cheat and deceive, and they just pay another fine. That's the cost of doing business. They don't care because they're following the example of the people in charge. This story is disgusting. Now, for nearly two decades at the Grand Canyon, tourists, employees, and children on tours passed numerous containers stored in the National Parks Museum Collection Building, completely unaware that they were being exposed to massive radiation. Now, federal officials learned last year that containers stored in the Grand Canyon's museum building were literally overflowing with highly radioactive uranium ore. Now, at this point, you'd think somebody would say, oh my God, we have to fix this problem. Make sure everybody knows they might have gotten sick and we should, own to this problem. Somebody's wrong. No, this is where cover-up takes over, right? Because this is what we do in this country. We lie, cheat, and steal, and deceive until we have to admit that we were wrong. This is, if you're following the example of our leaders, this is what we do. Now, they were moved to the museum building after they were discovered when it opened, or excuse me, before, when it opened in 2000, these containers were moved to the building and were so full of uranium ore that the one literally couldn't even close its top. Now, as azcentral.com reports in a rogue email sent to all Park Service employees on February 4th, Elston, nicknamed Swede Stevenson, the safety, health, and wellness manager, described the alleged cover-up as, quote, a top management failure and warned of possible health consequences. He said, if you were in the museum collections building between, get this, the year 2000 and June 18, 2018, so an 18-year span, you were exposed to uranium by OSHA's definition. Now, Stevenson says he tried to convince park executives to warn the public that anyone visiting the site after 2000 could have been exposed to radiation. He calculated at levels potentially over 4,000 times the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's safe level for children and 400 times the level for adults, but was apparently stonewalled by management. He believes the Park Service violated the law by not informing the public of the danger. You think? Right? Obviously they did, and they just don't care. Think about that. Now he says, quote, respectfully, it was not only immoral not to let our people know, and our people, he means the people that work there, but I could no longer risk my health and safety certification by letting this go any longer. Obviously, he's got some morals and decided that I can't, rightfully sleep at night knowing that we let this many people potentially suffer and we're not telling anybody about it. Now, Stevenson released a 45-page report detailing all the allegations. Now, apparently the radioactive stockpile was discovered by, guess what, a teenager with a Geiger counter, the counting the radiation levels that he during a museum tour and promptly swept under the rug. I mean, why he would have the Geiger counter, I don't know if there's something going on there other than this, but apparently he just kind of came across it, told somebody, and they just completely covered it up. This is according to Stevenson, adding the technicians dumped the ore themselves. So they immediately rushed it away, dumped it into an old mine near the Grand Canyon Village. I'm sure that's taken care of. Concealing their meter readings from him the entire time they were cleaning up the radioactive mess, trying to hide it from the guy that's in charge of safety. Now, alarmed at their unprofessional behavior, he called in the Occupational Health and Safety Administration, who found only the empty drums, because they got rid of it, which had been, quote, explicitly returned to the building and still gave off faint radiation readings, which is just humorous to me. Now, Emily Davis, a public affairs specialist at the Grand Canyon, declined to address Stevenson's assertions that thousands of people may have been exposed to dangerous levels of radiation or his allegation that the Park Service violated the law by not issuing a public warning. But now is basically just saying, well, look, just test for yourself. There's just some empty buckets there. Yeah, it's just some regular radiation. There's nothing going on here. Nothing to see here. This is what she's saying. And then refusing to acknowledge his claims at all, just saying no record, no comment. This is unbelievable that they can just go dump this off in some other location and not tell people that they made a big mistake. And something like this, you could argue that somebody may not even actually be legally held accountable for something that happened a long time ago. Maybe they didn't know what they had. But the fact that they then covered it up, that is a crime. And this is what we're talking about today. This is the kind of world that we have that's been built around us. The kind of world where these things happen regularly. This is not a new concept. Americans have been kept in the dark, even at their own great risk, potential death and grave side effects, countless times in American history. Countless times. And all of these articles will be in the show notes for you to check out. The first one, that's one that's in California. Right now that's in California that still people don't know about and is actually one of the largest nuclear disasters in history that they completely hid from everybody. As well as another one that the media was just completely silent on. Even many times in recent memory, we've seen these kind of actions where they just disregard the safety of Americans. All in order to shield those at fault from accountability. And of course, usually to their great profit. This is a symptom of a much larger problem. Something that we've seen going for, ongoing. The incompetence, the ineptitude, the malfeasance is something we need to really begin to see. And until we see that problem for what it is and what is, you know, what it's doing every day to generation after generation, born into a lifetime of war, as if that's normal, born into a time of unbridled corruption, as if that's honorable, until we see past the disguise, we will only be aiding with this visible and pervasive deterioration of what we feel makes us who we are. And these things have been happening since the beginning. I just feel like sometimes in the past, people felt they were obligated to call it out. But so much today, we have been told and conditioned to think that we just have to acquiesce to whatever they're doing, lest we be un-American. The sad reality is it takes a true American to stand up and point out what's going wrong today. And I hope you all do the same. Thank you so much for tuning in. As all the links at the end and everything else is always in the show notes below. Everything you want to research, and I recommend you do, dive into it further. Look into it for yourself. Come to your own conclusions, as we always say. Don't just let any one person guide you in a direction. Question me. Question everybody. Research for yourself. Do your due diligence and ask questions. It's paramount today. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.